So it's 11.47 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Never a good time for the phone to ring.
Right, exactly. So the phone rings, and Carol, a 67-year-old retired nurse, you know, answers it. On the other end of the line is her grandson, Tyler.
And he's in trouble.
Major trouble. His voice is shaking. He's totally terrified. He tells her he's been in a car accident in another city. He's in jail. And he needs $2,400 for bail. And he begs her not to tell his parents.
Which is the classic hook.
It is. So Carol does what any loving grandparent would do. She drives to a 24-hour store, buys the gift cards, and reads the numbers over the phone to a total stranger. But here's the twist. Tyler was fast asleep in his own bed the entire time.
Yeah, that voice on the phone wasn't him at all.
Not even a little bit.
It was an entirely synthetic audio clone. And the wild part is, the scammers didn't even have a recording of Tyler saying those specific words.
Right.
They simply pulled a really short public video from his social media feed. They fed a few seconds of his voice into an AI generator, typed out a script, and that was it.
Which is just terrifying. And that terrifying reality is really the starting point for today's deep dive into Patrick Thomas's book, AI Safety and Scam Prevention.
It's such a crucial read right now.
It really is, because we are looking at a fundamental dismantling of how we perceive truth. I mean, the baseline of reality, trusting our own eyes and ears, is literally being weaponized against us.
Yeah, the rules have completely changed.
They have. Mm. But our mission for this deep dive isn't to leave you feeling, you know, paranoid. We're going to break down the exact mechanics of these technologies so you can understand them, anticipate them, and ultimately become much harder to fool.
Exactly. And to really understand the threat, we have to look at the economics driving it.
Unpack that a bit. The economics.
Yeah. So the traditional fraud model, it was constrained by physical logistics.
Hmm.
Think about a legacy advance fee scam or a modern tech support scam.
Right. You needed a massive call center.
You did. You needed rows of human beings sitting at desks, dialing numbers, managing scripts. It was a high friction, really labor-intensive business model.
But artificial intelligence changes the math.
It has virtually eliminated that overhead.
Okay, let's unpack this math because it's fascinating. If a scammer no longer has to pay 20 people to make 200 calls a day, what does the new operation actually look like?
Well, it looks like a single operator managing a system that runs thousands of hyper-personalized attacks simultaneously.
Thousands. Just one person.
Right. The marginal cost of generating an AI-driven text or a voice clone, or a fake persona, it's practically zero.
Wow.
And because the cost is so vanishingly low, the success rate doesn't even need to be high.
Because of the volume.
Exactly. Even a conversion rate of like a 0.1% on 1 million automated, highly targeted outreach attempts.
Mm.
That yields a massive return on investment.
It's a pure economy of scale, just governed entirely by code.
Spot on.
The source material uses this analogy that I love to explain the engine powering this. It describes the AI as a well-read intern.
Oh, that's such a great way to frame it.
Right. If we think about large language models, they have essentially ingested the entire internet. They've processed millions of corporate memos, bank notices, customer service transcripts.
They've read everything.
Exactly. So if you command the system to draft a phishing email that perfectly mimics the tone, the layout, and the terminology of a specific regional bank, it does it in milliseconds.
But there is a flaw.
Yeah. The crucial flaw of this intern is its inherent design. It's a predictive engine. It's not a database of facts.
And that distinction is absolutely vital. A large language model doesn't actually know information the way a human does.
It's just math.
Right. It calculates the statistical probability of the next word in a sequence.
Hmm.
So when the AI lacks specific information to complete a prompt, it doesn't just pause and admit ignorance.
It doesn't say, I don't know.
Never. It simply predicts the most plausible sounding sequence of words to fill the gap. In the tech industry, we call this hallucination.
Right, hallucination.
The system will invent tracking numbers, fake compliance laws, or non-existent bank executives, and it does it with supreme misplaced confidence.
And while that hallucination is a flaw, the AI's mastery of language has really completely destroyed our oldest defense mechanism.
Oh, the grammar.
Yes. For two decades, we were taught to spot fraudulent emails by looking for broken English. Right.
Awkward syntax, glaring typo.
Exactly. That was the primary tell. But today, the text generated by these models is syntactically flawless.
And the danger really compounds when you combine that flawless syntax with the staggering amount of data already leaked in corporate breaches.
Which is everywhere now.
It is. The scammers aren't just sending out 1 million generic dear customer emails anymore. They ingest databases containing your name, your address, the specific bank you use.
Your recent purchase history.
Exactly. Yeah. They feed those data points into the LLM as parameters. So the resulting message isn't just grammatically perfect. It possesses this terrifying degree of contextual awareness about your life.
Yeah. And if the text-based red flags are gone, that explains the shift toward targeting our biology directly.
Yes, moving past the inbox.
Right. They are going straight for our auditory and visual processing centers. Going back to Carol's story from the intro, the concept that just 3 to 10 seconds of audio is enough to clone a voice. I mean, that seems almost physically impossible.
It really does.
How is the software achieving that with such a tiny sample size?
Well, it's not simply recording and splicing audio clips together like the old days. The AI actually analyzes the acoustic properties of the voice sample.
So it's building a profile.
Right. It maps the pitch, the timbre, the cadence, and the specific phonetic patterns of the speaker. Once it builds that acoustic model, it can synthesize entirely new speech.
Wow.
So whatever text the operator types into the console, the software renders it using that mathematical model of the victim's vocal cords.
And it bypasses our logical filters completely.
Because our brains are evolutionarily wired to respond instantly to the sound of a loved one in distress.
Yeah, that amygdala response. And that biological manipulation extends to our visual processing as well.
Oh, absolutely.
The source material details this romance scam involving a woman named Linda. She joined a hiking group on social media and connected with a user named David.
And David seemed perfect.
Oh, perfect. According to his profile, he was a 58-year-old widowed civil engineer. Over several weeks, they exchanged detailed messages, shared life stories. They built this really deep emotional connection.
Which is the hook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Linda transferred $22,000 to him for a series of fabricated emergencies. But here's the thing. David never existed.
Not at all.
The profile photo was entirely synthesized by an AI image generator, and the conversation was heavily managed by chatbots.
You know, romance scams operate by isolating the victim and slowly building a dependency. In the past, scammers had to steal photos of real people.
Which was a vulnerability for them.
Exactly, because the victims could just perform a reverse image search and potentially expose the fraud.
Right, you find out the guy is actually a stock photo model.
Exactly. But by utilizing AI-generated faces, the scammers create unique visual assets that yield zero results on a reverse search. The image is just a complete digital ghost.
But I have to challenge the idea that these visual ghosts are completely flawless, though.
Oh, they definitely aren't.
Right, because human beings possess highly specialized neural circuitry specifically for facial recognition. We spend our entire lives reading micro-expressions and facial geometry.
Yeah, we're experts at faces.
So if the image generation is just math predicting pixels, there must be a structural limit to what it can convincingly render. I mean, we should be able to spot the uncanny valley, right?
You are absolutely correct. And understanding how these images are built reveals exactly where you need to look.
Okay, what's the tell?
Well, most of these faces are created using generative adversarial networks, or GANs.
G-A-N.
Right. Think of it as two neural networks locked in a contest. The generator tries to create a realistic image, and the discriminator evaluates it against millions of real photos to spot the fake.
Ah, so they fight each other.
Exactly. They iterate back and forth until the generator fools the discriminator. But the system struggles immensely with complex, localized geometry.
So it can get the overall symmetry of a face right, but it fails on the finer contextual details.
Precisely. The math often breaks down at the boundaries. If you look closely at where the hair meets the background, an AI will frequently blur or warp that transition.
Because it can't handle the lighting on individual strands.
Right. Or look at the jewelry. A GAN will regularly generate asymmetrical accessories, like a hoop earring on the left, a stud on the right.
Oh, interesting.
Or a shape that physically couldn't even hang from an earlobe. And teeth are another major failure point.
Oh, yeah. The teeth always look weird to me.
Because human teeth have distinct variations in size, shape, and shading. AI tends to render them as unnaturally uniform, almost like a solid block of white pixels with artificial ridges.
The source also mentions that viral photo of an explosion at a government facility.
Oh, right. That caused quite a stir.
It caused a brief panic online. But when analysts looked really closely at the responding firefighters in the image, one of them had six fingers.
Yeah, the AI understood the general concept of a hand, but completely failed the complex geometric rendering of articulated joints.
But the issue is that scammers rely on the fact that we rarely scrutinize a photo on a microscopic level.
No one is zooming in on the hands while they're doom scrolling.
Exactly. We scroll quickly, we react emotionally, and we hit share. They are basically weaponizing our speed against us.
Yes.
And that emotional reaction is really the pivot point for the more sophisticated financial operations.
Which is where the real money is made.
Right. We've looked at emotional extortion in the grandparent scam and the romance scams.
Yeah.
Let's analyze how this tech simulates entire economic ecosystems to trigger our greed. The methodology here is known as pig butchering.
The nomenclature is grim, but it's very accurate. The operation is split into two phases. First, fattening the pig, which means building trust and demonstrating value over a long period of time. The eventual slaughter, where the assets are drained and the operator just vanishes?
The text follows a victim named James. He's 47. He's heavily involved in the stock market. Highly analytical guy.
Not your typical target.
No. He isn't someone who falls for a generic phishing link. But he was introduced to a new cryptocurrency trading platform by an online contact.
Let me guess. The platform looked flawless.
Flawless user interface. So he deposited a small amount of money and watched his portfolio grow by 14% in real time.
Which hooks him.
Right. The platform even allowed him to withdraw those early gains, which completely solidified his trust.
It always does.
So he eventually transferred $140,000, and the very next day, the website was just gone. So how does the AI simulate that back-end reality so convincingly to fool a veteran investor like James?
By spoofing the data APIs. The AI isn't just generating a pretty website. It's dynamically pulling real market data, like actual fluctuations in Bitcoin or Ethereum.
By modifying it?
Exactly. Modify it specifically for the victim's dashboard. So James was looking at legitimate market trends, but the AI algorithmically inflated the multiplier on his specific fabricated assets.
And the early withdrawal he made.
That was paid out using funds stolen from previous victims.
Wow.
The interface was an entirely closed loop, essentially a digital terrarium designed specifically to validate his existing biases about crypto investing.
It's engineering a false reality.
Completely.
And that same principle applies to how AI is supercharging the spread of misinformation.
Oh, absolutely.
Think back to the initial rollout of 5G networks in the UK. A narrative emerged linking the cell towers to respiratory illnesses.
Right, and it led to physical vandalism and threats against engineers.
Yeah. And this wasn't just organic panic. AI tools were utilized to generate highly polished articles complete with fabricated expert quotes from non-existent virologists.
And plausible-sounding medical journal citations.
The mechanics of how that fake news takes root in the public consciousness are fascinating.
It relies heavily on cognitive fluency, which leads to something called the illusory truth effect.
Explain that cognitive fluency.
Well, our brains are incredibly energy efficient. When we are repeatedly exposed to a claim, the cognitive friction required to process that information actually decreases.
So it gets easier to think about.
Right. And because it feels easier to process, our brains automatically interpret it as more likely to be true.
So familiarity literally masquerades as factual accuracy.
Exactly. When AI allows a bad actor to flood the zone with thousands of variations of the same false claim across multiple platforms, they artificially trigger that cognitive fluency.
It's everywhere, so it must be true.
Right. And you couple that with confirmation bias, our tendency to embrace information that validates our pre-existing anxieties, and the false narrative just sets like concrete.
And by the time independent researchers debunk the claim,
the correction has to fight uphill against both the algorithm and human neurology.
Yeah.
The truth just travels much slower.
Which requires us to establish a defensive protocol before we even engage with the content.
We have to.
The source material outlines the SIFT framework, S-I-F-T. It's designed to act as a cognitive interrupt when you are consuming information online.
And the S stands for stop.
Right.
The S is arguably the most vital component of the whole thing. The book illustrates this with an example of an article claiming a very common breakfast food accelerates memory loss.
Oh, I've seen things exactly like that.
We all have. And that specific formulation, linking a mundane daily habit to a devastating health outcome, is mathematically optimized to hijack the amygdala.
It triggers an immediate survival response. You feel panic, and your very first instinct is to warn your family by hitting share.
Right. And that amygdala hijacks completely bypasses your prefrontal cortex, which is what handles your critical thinking.
You stop thinking, you just act.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So SIFT trains you to recognize that sudden spike in emotion, whether it's panic, outrage, or even extreme validation, as an indicator of manipulation. The pause gives your executive function time to come back online.
Once you've paused, the I is investigate the source. Do they have a Wikipedia page? What is their actual editorial track record?
Yeah.
Then F is find better coverage. If a discovery is truly groundbreaking, the major independent scientific or journalistic bodies will be reporting on it. You have to cross-reference.
Always.
And finally, T is trace the claim. Find the primary source to see if the quote or data was stripped of its original context.
And using SIFT on that breakfast food article, you would quickly realize that the cited Journal of Neurological Sciences doesn't even exist.
It was completely made up.
It was a hallucinated citation generated by an LLM just to add a veneer of authority to a clickbait farm.
Implementing frameworks like SIFT handles the information we consume. But we really need to look at how we secure our actual digital infrastructure.
This is critical.
We all know the baseline requirements at this point. I mean, anyone paying attention knows they need a password manager to generate complex, unique credentials for every site. We know we need two-factor authentication, or 2FA, enabled on our email and financial accounts. That is table stakes.
Bare minimum.
But if the attackers are utilizing advanced AI, how are they attempting to bypass those standard hygiene practices?
Well, they recognize that brute forcing a complex password or, you know, intercepting a text message is getting increasingly difficult. So AI operators pivot to attacking the human element of those security protocols.
Okay, how so?
A prime example is the MFA fatigue attack.
MFA fatigue.
Right. An AI agent will acquire a target's compromised password and then rapidly, relentlessly trigger the two-factor authentication request.
So your phone is just constantly buzzing.
Exactly. The victim's phone pings with login approval requests dozens of times an hour, often late at night.
They literally annoy the victim into submission.
The goal is to induce alert fatigue. The victim, exhausted and assuming the app is simply glitching, eventually just hits approve just to stop the notification. And once authorized, the automated system immediately hijacks the session token, locks the user out, and drains the account before the victim even realizes what they authorized.
That is so insidious.
And another vector is using AI to scrape public social media profiles. They map your employer, your recent vacations, your family connections.
To craft highly targeted spear phishing emails.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Designed specifically to trick you into handing over that session token voluntarily.
So leaving your digital footprint uncurated is basically like handing a burglar the blueprints to your house and a schedule of exactly when you're not home.
That's a perfect way to look at it.
Which brings up the challenge of how we communicate these evolving threats to our families. Because, I mean, if I sit my older parents down and start lecturing them about session tokens and MFA fatigue, they are going to shut down.
Oh, completely.
The immediate reaction will be defensiveness.
The psychology of the conversation is critical here. If you approach it from a posture of authority, implying they are uniquely vulnerable because of their age, you alienate them immediately.
Right. So what does the author suggest?
Thomas suggests framing it as a collaborative discovery. You share a narrative. You say something like, I was just reading about how scammers are using software to clone voices now, and it's terrifying.
So you make the technology the adversary, not their lack of awareness.
Exactly. It changes the whole dynamic.
The actionable takeaway from that conversation is establishing a family code word.
Yes. This is so important.
You agree on a random noun like pineapple or lighthouse or radiator, something completely disconnected from your digital footprint.
Right.
If anyone calls claiming to be in an emergency, the protocol is to simply ask for the word. An AI voice clone operating off a scraped social media video won't have it.
It is an elegant defense mechanism because it relies on shared offline knowledge, completely air-gapped from the internet.
It just cuts the tech off at the knees.
It instantly neutralizes the most sophisticated, compute-heavy audio cloning technology currently available.
But even with robust defenses, you know, breaches happen. If someone is targeted and realizes they've engaged with a fraudulent system, what is the immediate protocol?
Mitigation relies entirely on velocity. Speed is everything.
Okay, what are the steps?
If a wire transfer was initiated, contact the fraud department of the financial institution immediately to attempt a recall.
Right.
If a malicious link was clicked, disconnect the device from the network entirely, run a comprehensive malware sweep, and rotate the credentials on any exposed accounts using a secure separate device.
And report it, right.
Furthermore, yes, report the incident to the Federal Trade Commission or the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center. The data you provide actually helps them map the infrastructure of these operations.
One of the most important points the source stresses regarding the aftermath, though, is the psychological toll. Victims often experience profound shame.
Which is exactly what the operators want.
Mm-hmm.
Silence protects their methodology.
Yeah.
We have to recognize that these are not the transparent, poorly translated spam emails of the early 2000s. These are highly sophisticated psychological operations executed by systems designed to exploit human cognitive biases.
So falling victim to a personalized AI-driven attack, it's a failure of the technological ecosystem to protect its users.
Exactly. It is not a personal moral failing of the victim.
We really need to dismantle that stigma because the technology isn't plateauing. The book outlines where this is heading, and the horizon is daunting, to say the least.
We are rapidly approaching the era of autonomous AI agents.
Autonomous.
Yeah. Currently, an operator still needs to string together different tools: a text generator, a voice cloner, an API spoofer. The next generation of models will execute end-to-end campaigns completely autonomously.
So they won't even need a human pulling the string.
Right. An agent will be given a financial target, and it will independently scrape the data, initiate contact, manage a multi-day relationship, dynamically adjust its tactics based on the victim's responses, and extract the funds without any human oversight.
That is wild.
We are also seeing the rise of synthetic identities, where AI merges fragments of real stolen data with fabricated profiles to create Frankenstein identities.
And those are hard to catch.
Incredibly difficult for banking algorithms to flag.
And on the visual front, the evolution is moving from static images to real-time rendering.
Live deepfakes.
Oh, man.
The processing power is reaching a point where an AI can seamlessly map a fabricated face and voice onto an operator during a live video call.
So you can't even trust a video chat.
The visual verification of seeing someone on a screen will no longer be absolute proof of identity.
It really paints a picture of a digital landscape where absolutely nothing can be taken at face value. Yet, the core defense mechanism we've discussed remains surprisingly low tech.
It does.
Regardless of whether a scammer is using a massive call center or a fleet of autonomous AI agents, their fundamental objective never changes. They need the victim to execute an action transferring funds, clicking a link, authorizing a login before the victim's critical thinking engages.
Artificial urgency is the constant.
Which makes the pause your absolute baseline defense.
The technology may evolve, but the protocol of verification does not. You never rely on inbound communication.
Right.
If a call claims to be your bank, you hang up, locate the number on the back of your physical card, and dial out. You verify through a channel that you independently control.
And that slight friction completely breaks the attack chain.
Every single time.
We've covered a lot today. The mechanics of hallucination, the structural limits of generated images, and how cognitive biases are exploited. But I want to leave you with a final thought to consider as we wrap up this deep dive.
It's an important one.
If our absolute greatest defense against this highly advanced billion-dollar AI industry is simply taking a pause to verify, how much of our vulnerability actually comes from the technology itself? And how much is a byproduct of our modern culture? We've built a society that demands instant communication, zero inbox policies, and immediate reactions. Maybe the ultimate firewall against artificial intelligence isn't a piece of software at all. Maybe it's just reclaiming our right to slow down.